1. The captain. Valencia sat quietly, ruminating over the next job, her hands wrapped around a steaming mug of hot tea. The promenade on Bistsoft station was abuzz, the ocean of humans and Grawl ebbing and flowing, all visible from the tiny bistro table overlooking everything. She wasn't big on tea, never bothering to stock it aboard the Tristero, because of the logistics of the warm water bulbs and steeping tea inside of them. That meant sticking to water and coffee. Yeah, somehow a decent cup of coffee was possible, but tea from a synthesizer was demonstrably the worst. She leaned back in her metal chair, crossing her leg over her knee, her scuffed-up boot bouncing up and down while her arms folded over her chest, the tug of the taut leather jacket a welcome embrace. Her contact was late, something that always pissed her off. "Hey, Cap," Beck squawked over her in earcom. "What's up, Beck? Any sighting of the client yet?" "No." Valencia glared up at a clock above the counter of the bistro. "He's late." "That's too bad. So since he's late, mind if I disembark and pick up a few supplies?" "More licorice? Didn't we just get some last week?" "Hey, I'm a growing girl, right? Where's Drake? Can't he pick it up? I want to get off of here as soon as possible." "Why the rush? If the job doesn't come through, maybe we can take a break. I think we all need it after everything we've been through." "Go get your candy," she said. "Just be ready, okay?" Beck wasn't wrong. After what had happened to them with the Grawl, there was a sense of fatigue that had come over the crew. Sergeant Rose's passing had impacted her more than she thought it would, and his son Drake had turned even more inward, if that was even possible, although he was sharing his art more. Granted, that art was macabre and concerning, although she was trying to be supportive of his newfound sense of expression. They had taken a few jobs since then, mostly small salvage missions that weren't a ton of trouble. The few derelict ships they had discovered served as must-avoid ill omens after what had happened the last time, even at Drake's protests that someone could need help. Instead, she'd send messages back to Terran authorities and let the professionals handle the cleanup. Sergeant Atticus Rose was a miserable old man, completely impossible to deal with, yet he had fallen into the role of an uncle or father-like figure for her. He was always loyal and always got the job done, even if it came with cursing and grumbling. His son Drake was another story entirely. He was trying to fill his father's duties as best he could, but was a poor imitation. Instead, the miraculously alive Grawl warrior Gentar took on the role of the muscle for the crew, doing his best to ignore the reduced range of movement in his shoulder from the damage he took in the battle with Giga. "Captain Vasquez?" A voice broke her from her reverie. "That's me." She looked up to see a short, balding man in an ill-fitting suit, looking around nervously. "You must be Mr. Jordash." "Yes," he said. "I'm sorry I'm late, there's just been a bit of commotion around." "That's fine, sit down please. If you don't mind, I like to get right down to business, unless you want a drink?" "No, no." He folded his hands in front of him, fingers twitching. "So. Oh, right." Without ceremony, he produced a small cylinder from his pocket and placed it on the table between them. A paper-thin clear screen unrolled out and the display kicked on, showing a ship manifest filled with numbers. "2 weeks ago, one of my ships ran into a minor issue out in the DMZ, and the crew foolishly jettisoned the container it was carrying to get away." "What kind of trouble? Pirates?" "I don't know really," he said. "They didn't make it." "What do you mean they didn't make it?" Whatever this guy wanted, Valencia was thinking twice about it. "Terran authorities picked the ship up, and it was empty." "Where was your crew?" "Gone." "There was no trace, no log entries from the captain or anyone else?" "Nothing, no," he said. "Life pods still attached and everything." "And you want me to do what here, find your crew?" "Oh no," he said. "I mean, if you could, that would be great and all, just, the authorities are looking for them already and there's no trace." "You just want us to return your cargo then?" "Yes, correct. The cargo drop point was somewhere near the dwarf planet Thule. I'm not sure if it's still in orbit or if it's on the planet somewhere. Okay. She paused, attempting to collect herself. You do know that Thule is an ocean planet, correct? If it is there, it's gonna be difficult to retrieve, if that's even possible. Do you even have a tracker on it? Yes, I can give you the frequencies for it if that helps. It should help. Look, Mr. Jordash, this job sounds like it could be difficult. Thule is over the DMZ line inside Grawl space and was the site of one of the bloodiest battles in the Terran-Grawl War. Both sides lost millions. Who knows how many of those ships crashed into the drink there? There's gonna be a lot of stuff floating around there. I know, but with the tracker. We'll get rough coordinates, sure, but it could be anywhere. How do you know it didn't get scooped up by some pirates, anyway? I don't, but I just want you to look. I can compensate you well, if that's the issue. That's nice, she said. I just don't want to put my crew at risk if I don't have to. A disappearing crew and lost cargo on a planet full of water sounds like some old mystery novel. I know, but really, I want my cargo back. Dare I ask what's so precious? She asked. I'd appreciate your discretion in the matter, and that you respect my privacy. No offense, Mr. Jordash, but this is a dangerous job. Here, I didn't want to part with this, but I suppose I have no choice. Reaching into his other pocket, he flicked a small chip with a pulsing green light onto the table, and it landed on the table in front of her. And this is. She picked it up, inspecting it curiously. A key of sorts. A key. Yes, see, if you press the light, the interface node produces a peg in. I got it. She pressed the tiny button, flicking the node out. See? Yes. Right. That was retrieved from the ship, and I'd prefer if you brought it back in one piece. It's the only one, you see. Of course, she said. This deal sounded worse and worse each time he opened his mealy mouth. She noticed that there was a commotion out on the promenade, sizable crowds gathering in clusters. Well, I'll make no promises for now, but we'll go and look into it. Since this job is a bit riskier than others, I'll want a payment up front as an act of good faith. A down payment then. Additional fees, we keep it regardless of if we take the job or not. For supplies to get us out to Thule and investigate. Well, I? Take it or leave it. You know our reputation, we can just take another job, she said, standing up and starting to leave. No, wait, I'll pay, he said. Good then. Taking a deep breath, she turned back toward him. We have a deal. I expect that payment in my account before we depart today. How much, exactly? 10,000 credits should be good for now. Okay, that's fine, he said, offering his sweaty palm. Valencia took it and forced out a smile before leaving him to his thoughts. Valencia slurped down the last of her tea and headed back toward the hangar bays, pushing through the throngs of mulling onlookers, agitated at the obstructions. Her head was still swimming at the new job. Something about it wasn't sitting right with her, and she didn't know what to make of it yet. They'd just have to go out there and do some investigating. If anything looked off, though, they were out of there. At least she got the 10,000 out of him. Hey, Cap, Beck said through the comm. You get your candy? Just met with our client, we've got a head for Thule. About that. What? Valencia asked. Are you by a screen by any chance? There are thousands of them here, you know that better than I do. I'm just walking through the promenade now, heading toward the ship. You might want to stop to look at a newsfeed or check your handheld. What? Just look, Beck urged. Fine, Valencia grumbled, pushing her way through one cluster of people crowding in front of a screen. The image of a cylindrical object with tendrils and an FTL plume filled the screen, the scrawl on the bottom reading, Unidentified Object Seen in DMZ. A shiver ran down her spine at the object, most likely a ship, though unlike anything she'd ever seen before. It sure wasn't Terran, which meant that it had to be some sort of top-secret Gral project, and of course, it was in orbit around Thule. "Are you fucking kidding me?" she asked. "Is that where we're headed, Cap?" "I guess so," she said. "What is that?" "I don't know, but I suppose we're gonna find out." "Beck, why isn't this hunk of scrap warmed up and ready to get us the hell out of here?" Valencia was doing her best to sound imposing, but knew she was failing miserably. "I'm on it, Cap," said the dark-skinned woman with her hair gathered into a frizzy poof on the top of her head. That was all the assurance Valencia needed, knowing that while from the outside their crew seemed haphazard, they were in fact a well-oiled machine that knew how to make it all work in the end. Gentar greeted her at the top of the stairs before the door to the kitchen, his bulky gray frame stuffed inside a green jumpsuit with his name and the Tristero call sign on the back. He had slid into his role as the mechanic aboard the ship with relative ease after all they had gone through, even if he was best suited for combat and could have argued about pulling double duty by also assuming Sergeant Rose's position as security, yet he never muttered a single complaint. His sense of honor wouldn't let him. Complaints about stuff that didn't involve honor, though. That was a different story, especially for a Gral growing accustomed to Terran customs. "What's the matter now, Gentar?" Although she asked the question, she knew it opened her up to a bombardment of complaints, considering his stance and demeanor. "Thule is cursed." "A job is a job," she said. "We both lost a lot of lives in that battle, but hopefully this is a quick job and we're able to get in, find the container, and get out." "I refuse to set foot on that planet," Gentar asserted, a stance she suspected he'd take. "Good thing that it's all water, there's no ground to step on." "You know what I mean." That planet was a turning point for Gentu, where he understood that for both our sakes we needed to reconcile. "I understand that, but an entire planet can't be some holy gravesite. It's a planet. There are at least a few million dead there. That's just Gral. There were more dead Terrans," he said. "And our client's container of, well, whatever it is. He's paying and we need money." "Is it true about his crew disappearing?" "Supposedly," she said. "My guess is they quit, dumped his cargo, and he's too embarrassed to admit it." "And that object from the newscasts?" "I don't know," she said. "I figure it's some sort of Gral ship. It's unlike any Gral vessel I've ever seen. There are 7 houses, right? I'm sure that some conduct their own experiments. We saw what Gral Unity looked like with Giga. Be True is doing a fine job as protector. I'm sure any attempts at revolt were quietly and efficiently quelled," Gentar said. "I'm not saying he isn't, but it's not like we're in close contact with them or anything. How about you send a message to him and see what he says?" "Already have, I'm waiting to hear back." "Good, see. It'll be fine. You worry too much," she said. "I've faced death multiple times now, Captain Vasquez. I have a good sense of when it'll try to claim my life again." "It'll be okay." She reached out and massaged his good shoulder. There was a constant unease about him since he got out of the med bay and discovered that Drake's father had died, and while he fulfilled his duties without a complaint, there was a shadow hanging over him. "I won't put any of us in danger for a few thousand credits. I promise." "Understood." She left him to brood while heading into the kitchen, noting that Drake's door was open but he wasn't inside. She couldn't fight the sigh that escaped, with it becoming increasingly difficult to rein him in since his father's death. She understood why he was a mess and tried to give him the space he needed, but within reason. "And where is our starving artist, Beck?" Valencia asked. "He's en route, he says," Beck replied over the shipwide comm channel, knowing Drake would hear it. "I want to get the hell out of here already. I know you're listening, Drake." "I'm just outside the hangar," he said. "I'll be on in a minute, okay?" "Just hurry up, we've got a job," Valencia said.
"Where?"
"Thule," Becca interjected. The ice planet, he asked. Water, but close enough. I'll explain when you're on board, Valencia said. What does it have to do with that weird thing? What weird thing? Oh, you mean the object on the newscasts? Nothing, at least I don't think. Copy that, Cap, he replied. The captain stomped up into the cockpit, resting her arm against the top and leaning against Beck's chair, a comfortable place that she found herself often. Beck barely even noticed her because of how often she hovered overhead like that. She watched while the pilot's fingers danced along the controls, warming up the ship's systems and preparing for takeoff. Even with all the change and drama they'd endured, there was a comfort with being in the cockpit and watching things working like clockwork instead of brewing in the murky waters of the current. We cleared for takeoff? MM? Beck nodded her head, her frizzy hair bouncing back and forth over the headband wrapped over her forehead. An alert chimed, noting that the cargo hold door had shut, which meant that Drake was aboard. Beck ran the final checks while the captain slipped into the co-pilot's chair and fastened her harness. All right, boys, we're taking off, Valencia said. Let's try not to die this time, Beck joked, turning to the captain, who merely raised her eyebrows at the joke and looked away. You better be strapped in because I'm taking off. Both replied with simple grunts before the ship lurched forward, slowly making its way through the big launch doors and out into the cold, dark, and welcoming vacuum of space.